This is AudioRx.study, where pharmacists, pharmacy students, and the pharmacy profession comes to learn through audio learning. Learn through listening at AudioRx.study, a dedicated audio platform designed for busy pharmacy students, pharmacists, and pharmacy industry professionals.
Hello, Pharmacy Podcast Nation. It's your fast-forward pharmacist here, Dr. Chloe Givens. And before we dive into today's review, I just wanted to let you know that information discussed today can also be found referenced in the JAMA Network Open Access Journal titled Medications for Treating Infection. Links to this journal article and more can be found listed for you in the show notes of this episode. And should you need any additional information, please visit the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention website. As always, if you ever have any questions or concerns, please don't hesitate to get in contact with me. You can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram, as well as my website, fastforwardpharm.com. My email will also always be linked, so you can get in touch with me that way should you need to. And without further ado, let's get into today's review. Welcome back to the NAPLEX podcast, everyone. Today, we are going to be completing part two of our infectious disease review series. In today's review, we are going to go over antifungals and antivirals. So we are going to cover everything from meningitis and upper and lower respiratory tract infections to tuberculosis, skin and soft tissue infections, UTIs, and sexually transmitted diseases. To begin, we need to review perioperative antibiotic prophylaxis. When you hear the term perioperative, you should automatically think of prior to surgery. So these are going to be antibiotics that are given prior to a patient undergoing surgery. The most common antibiotics that you will see used for perioperative prophylaxis are going to be cefazolin or ceferoxime, and in some cases you'll see vancomycin or fluoroquinolones used. With cefazolin, we want to infuse that 60 minutes prior to the incision. So an hour before surgery, a patient needs to have cefazolin infused or ceferoxime. If the drug used is vancomycin or a fluoroquinolone, then that medication will be infused 120 minutes prior to the first incision. We also have what's known as intraoperative antibiotic prophylaxis, and this means during surgery, so antibiotics that are given during the patient's surgery. Typically, we don't see antibiotics used postoperatively or after surgery. This is just because normally they aren't needed, but if for whatever reason a patient does need to be on an antibiotic after their surgery, that drug needs to be discontinued within 24 hours. The first infection and treatment that we are going to review today is going to be the treatment for meningitis. Signs and symptoms of meningitis are going to include a severe headache, a stiff neck, and some patients will experience altered mental status. Meningitis is diagnosed with a lumbar puncture, and this is where the spinal fluid will be analyzed. Common pathogens that cause meningitis are going to include strep pneumo, Neisseria meningitidis, H-flu, and Listeria. We will be concerned about Listeria in particular in our neonates and adults who are older than 50 years old or those who are immunocompromised. There are three different age groups where we are going to focus our treatment for meningitis. For those ages less than 1 month old, so our neonates, treatment is going to consist of ampicillin plus gentamicin or cefotaxime. It's important to remember that in our neonates, we want to avoid the use of ceftriaxone. With those patients who are 1 month of age to 50 years old, our treatment regimen is going to consist of vancomycin plus ceftriaxone or cefotaxime. If our patient is greater than 50 years old or they are immunocompromised, then their treatment regimen will consist of ampicillin plus vancomycin plus ceftriaxone or cefotaxime. So you will notice that in our age greater than 50 years old or immunocompromised group, as well as our age less than 1 month old, those patients are going to be the ones receiving ampicillin, and that is because ampicillin is going to provide coverage for listeria. Dexamethasone is a medication that can be given prior to or with the first dose of a patient's antibiotics. And if the patient has already started their antibiotic treatment, then dexamethasone cannot be given. If a patient has a severe penicillin allergy, then a fluoroquinolone can be given instead, like ciprofloxacin or levofloxacin. Now we are going to go over our upper respiratory infections. There are a few of these, so we are just going to really focus on the treatment differences for each. First up is acute otitis media, which you will know as the common ear infection. Signs and symptoms of acute otitis media are going to include a bulging tympanic membrane, otalgia, also known as ear pain, and our younger patients may tug and rub at their ears. Typically, acute otitis media is going to be caused from a viral infection, but if it is bacterial, then our common pathogens are going to be strep pneumo or H flu. If a patient is experiencing non-severe signs and symptoms for 2 to 3 days and that patient is 6 to 23 months old with symptoms in one ear, or if they are greater than or equal to 2 years old and they are symptomatic in one or both ears, then we want to do what's called watching and waiting. This means we are not immediately sending these patients to their doctor and getting them on a medication. We are watching and waiting to see if the infection is going to resolve on its own. Severe symptoms are going to be those like a temperature of greater than 102 degrees Fahrenheit or otalgia that has continued consistently for greater than 48 hours. Our gold standard drug of choice for treatment of acute otitis media is going to be amoxicillin plus clavulanate, otherwise known as Augmentin. Augmentin is going to be given at a dose of 90 milligrams per kilogram per day, and we want to make sure that we are using the lowest dose of clavulanate possible to lower the chances of the patient experiencing diarrhea as a side effect. If the patient has a penicillin allergy, then we can use a cephalosporin. This is going to be our one exception to that penicillin allergy rule, so just make sure you remember that in case you are presented with a case on your Naplex where the patient does have acute otitis media, but they also have a penicillin allergy. Ceftriaxone IM at a dose of 50 milligrams per kilogram can be given if the patient cannot swallow, or if they have nausea and vomiting, or even if initial treatment fails. Ceftriaxone in this case is going to be given once daily for 1 to 3 days. If the patient comes down with the common cold where they are congested, maybe they have a headache and a sore throat, maybe even a cough and a runny nose, then this infection is going to be self-limiting and the patient can utilize over-the-counter products. If the patient has influenza, then we are going to treat with oseltamivir or Tamiflu, and it needs to be given within 48 hours. If a patient has pharyngitis, also known as strep throat, then we are going to treat this with either penicillin, amoxicillin, or a first or second generation cephalosporin. Lastly, if a patient has sinusitis where they have facial pain and purulent discharge, maybe a headache and fatigue, then we can treat this with Augmentin. Moving on, now we are going to review some of our lower respiratory tract infections. First up is going to be bronchitis, and this is recognized by inflammation of the mucous membranes, and a patient will have a cough with or without sputum, fatigue, headache, and even watery eyes. Bronchitis can be viral in nature, or it can be caused by bacteria like mycoplasma or H. flu, or even chlamydia or Bordetella pertussis. Acute bronchitis treatment is going to consist of supportive care, where the patient is making sure they're getting enough fluids. Maybe they're using vaporizers and antipyretics to help break that fever if they have one, and antitussives can be used supportively as well. Or the patient can use azithromycin at a dose of 500 milligrams times 1, followed by 250 milligrams taken daily on days 2 through 5, or they can use clarithromycin or Bactrim. For your Naplex, I would make sure that you know the dose for azithromycin for acute bronchitis treatment. We also have treatment for chronic bronchitis, and again, we can use supportive care here, but we are going to be incorporating oxygen therapy as well as maybe short-acting inhaled bronchodilators and maybe even IV or PO steroids. And if the patient is having sputum present and they're having worsening of their dyspnea or maybe even they're mechanically ventilated, then we want to give them Augmentin. If for whatever reason we cannot utilize Augmentin, then we can give azithromycin or doxycycline. For tuberculosis, this is going to be caused by Mycobacterium tuberculosis. This is an infection that is transmitted via aerosolized droplets, and there are not any signs and symptoms for latent disease. A patient with active tuberculosis disease is going to be highly contagious. They are going to require isolation. They are going to have a fever. They might experience night sweats, and they are going to have purulent sputum. TB is going to be diagnosed with a tuberculin skin test, also known as the PPD test. And latent tuberculosis, we do still need to treat this. And our treatment regimen is going to consist of either isoniazid times 9 months or rifampin taken for 4 months. If a patient has active TB and it has been confirmed by diagnosis and we have taken a sputum culture, then their treatment is going to be what's called RIPE therapy, and this is going to be given for 6 months. RIPE therapy, or RIPE, is going to be the acronym to help you remember the different drugs in this treatment regimen. R is for rifampin. I is for isoniazid, P is for pyrazinamide, and E is for ethambutol. I did mention that RIPE therapy is to be continued for 6 months, but it's important that you understand the breakdown of this 6 month period. For the first 2 months, we are going to be treating with RIPE therapy, so rifampin, isoniazid, pyrazinamide, and ethambutol. This is going to be for those first 8 weeks until we receive our cultures and susceptibilities back, and then we will start what's called the continuous phase of treatment, which will be with rifampin plus isoniazid for the remaining 4 months. Next up, we are going to review community-acquired pneumonia and hospital/ventilator-associated pneumonia. With community-acquired pneumonia, our common pathogens are going to be strep pneumo, H. flu, and some of our other atypicals that we discussed, including mycoplasma or chlamydia. Community-acquired pneumonia can also be caused by a viral infection, and we are going to diagnose CAP with a chest X-ray with new infiltrates and opacity seen on the X-ray. With therapy, you want to remember that you need to have coverage for your atypicals, so we are never going to use a beta-lactam as monotherapy. It is always going to be in combination with another medication that will cover our atypicals. With our CAP treatment, we have Category 1 treatment and Category 2 treatment. Category 1 is going to be for those patients who have not used antibiotics within the last 3 months. Category 2 are going to be our immunocompromised patients and those who have other comorbidities. With Category 1, we can give these patients a macrolide like azithromycin or clarithromycin, or we can give them doxycycline. With our Category 2 patients, we are going to give a beta-lactam plus a macrolide or doxycycline, or we can give them a respiratory fluoroquinolone like moxifloxacin, levofloxacin, or gemifloxacin. Remember, those respiratory fluoroquinolones go with the mnemonic My Good Lungs, M for moxifloxacin, G for gemifloxacin, and L for levofloxacin. Another key point that I want to stress is that if your patient is an inpatient, we are not going to give a macrolide or doxycycline as monotherapy. This is different from that Category 1 treatment that we just went over. If it is an inpatient, then we are always going to give a beta-lactam plus that macrolide or doxycycline or the respiratory fluoroquinolone. So I did just want to make that distinction. We do have Category 1 and Category 2 treatment, but if they are an inpatient, they are automatically going to receive that Category 2 treatment regimen. It's also important to remember that if the patient is at risk of a Pseudomonas infection, then we want to give an agent that is going to provide coverage for Pseudomonas. So our options are going to be things like Zosyn, Cefepime, or Meropenem plus levofloxacin, or Meropenem plus an aminoglycoside and azithromycin. If for some reason the patient is at risk of a MRSA infection, then we will want to add on coverage for MRSA with vancomycin or linezolid. Now, with our treatment for hospital-acquired and ventilator-associated pneumonia, we have to look at a few different risk factors. We need to look to see if the patient has been on IV antibiotics within the last 90 days. We need to see if there is a high MRSA prevalence. We also need to see if there are additional risk factors, like if the patient has been hospitalized for greater than 5 days, and if they are susceptible to septic shock. Treatment here is going to be continued for 7 days, and if our patient is at risk for Pseudomonas or staph, then we are going to give one drug. We can give either Zosyn, Cefepime, Levofloxacin, or Meropenem. If the patient is at risk for Pseudomonas and MRSA specifically, then we are going to need to give two drugs. We can give one of any of the drugs that I just mentioned, as well as vancomycin or linezolid to cover for MRSA. If the patient is at risk of a multi-drug resistant pathogen, as well as MRSA, then we are going to need to give three different antibiotics. For superficial infections like impetigo, we can give Bactroban or Cefalexin. For our folliculitis and Frunkles and carbuncles, which you can read about in your RX Prep course book, for those, we are going to give Cefalexin. If the patient is not responsive to Cefalexin, then we can add coverage for MRSA, and this can be done with either Bactrim or doxycycline. For non-purulent infections, again, we are going to utilize Cefalexin, and if the patient has a beta-lactam allergy, then we can use clindamycin instead.
For our purulent infections, also known as abscesses, we can give Bactrim, doxycycline, minocycline, or clindamycin. For our severe purulent infections, our main pathogen that we are going to be concerned about is MRSA, so our treatment is going to reflect that. We are going to use vancomycin or linezolid or daptomycin or even ceftaroline. We also have what's called necrotizing fasciitis, and commonly this will be caused by strep pyogenes, but it can also be caused by pathogens like C. diff and Pseudomonas. We're going to need broad spectrum empiric antibiotic coverage here, so we can use beta-lactams like zosyn, meropenem, or aztreonam, plus vancomycin. It's also very common for our diabetic patients to experience diabetic foot infections, and these are typically going to be polymicrobial. Treatment is going to consist of a broad spectrum antibiotic that covers for anaerobes, Pseudomonas, and MRSA. So a typical regimen might include vancomycin and zosyn. Urinary tract infections are another group of infections that you will deal with regularly as a pharmacist, and there are treatment options available for acute uncomplicated UTIs, also known as cystitis, or acute uncomplicated pyelonephritis, which is our upper UTI. For our lower UTI or cystitis, our typical treatment is going to be Bactrim double strength, one tablet, given by mouth twice daily for 3 days. If we don't use Bactrim, then we can use nitrofurantoin 100 milligrams given by mouth twice daily for 5 days. With Macrobid, we want to give this medication with food, and we don't want to use it if the patient's creatinine clearance is less than 60. Phenazopyridine, also known as Peridium and Azo, over-the-counter, is going to be used for dysuria, and this can cause red or orange discoloration of the bodily fluids, so patients do need to be counseled on this if they are planning on using azo. Azo can be taken with food 3 times a day for 2 days, and after that, symptoms of dysuria should resolve. I did mention that our treatment is a little bit different for our acute uncomplicated UTIs, also known as pyelonephritis. And if the patient is an outpatient and they are moderately ill and they can take a by-mouth product, then they can receive ciprofloxacin 500 milligrams given by mouth twice daily for 7 days. Or they can have ceftriaxone 1 gram given IV times 1 dose. For those who are severely ill, we are going to want to utilize IV antibiotic treatment, and we can use a fluoroquinolone or gentamicin plus ampicillin or ceftriaxone or even zosyn or a carbapenem if there is a risk of Pseudomonas. Lastly, with our UTIs are going to be our complicated urinary tract infections, and these are going to be treated like pyelonephritis. If the patient has a complicated UTI that is caused by an ESBL-producing bacteria, then we are going to need to use a carbapenem to treat them. Lastly, we need to go over our treatment of bacteriuria in our pregnant patients. For the Naplex, it is important that you know that we must treat our patients even if they are asymptomatic in this case, and we need to treat them for 3 to 7 days. If they come in and they present with symptoms, then we automatically know that we are going to treat those patients for 7 days. But just know that the range is from 3 to 7 days based on whether they are asymptomatic or symptomatic when they present. Our first line treatment for our bacteriuria in our pregnant patients is going to be with Augmentin, and if they cannot receive Augmentin, then we can give a cephalosporin. we want to make sure that we are avoiding fluoroquinolones. And if the patient has a beta-lactam allergy, then we can use Bactrim or nitrofurantoin. The last topic that we need to review today are going to be treatment options for our sexually transmitted diseases. For syphilis, I mentioned this in our last episode of the podcast, our drug of choice is going to be penicillin G, also known as Bicillin LA, and this is going to be given at a 2.4 million unit dose, given IM times 1. Alternative treatment here is going to be with doxycycline, and it's important that you remember that pregnant women who have a penicillin allergy should be desensitized and treated with Bicillin LA. For latent syphilis, we again want to treat with penicillin G, but our dose is going to be higher because the patient is going to be receiving 7.2 million units in total, but they are still going to be receiving 2.4 million units per dose given IV once weekly for 3 weeks. Next is going to be gonorrhea and chlamydia, and we talk about these two sexually transmitted diseases together because they are often presenting together in a patient. So if a patient has either one of these, we can treat with azithromycin 1 gram times 1 dose, or we can treat with doxycycline 100 milligrams given twice daily for 7 days. It's also important that you are able to recognize bacterial vaginosis and trichomoniasis. These two infections are going to be prevalent in our female patients only, and they are both going to be treated with metronidazole. Bacterial vaginosis is going to have vaginal discharge, and the woman may notice a fishy odor. And with trichomoniasis, again, the woman is going to experience vaginal discharge, but in this case, it is going to be yellow, green in color, and frothy in texture. A woman with trichomoniasis may also have soreness and pain with sexual intercourse. All right, everyone, that is going to conclude part 2 of our infectious disease review. In our next episode of the NAPLEX podcast, we are going to continue on with part 3 of our infectious disease review, and we are going to go over our antifungals and antivirals. Until then, I hope you all have a fantastic remainder of your day, and I will meet you back here for our next episode of the podcast.